Welcome to Between the Lines, where we journey beyond the surface of Scripture with hosts David and Jonathan. Get ready to deepen your faith as we uncover the hidden gems of the Bible. Without further ado, here's our show.
You're here with David and Jonathan on WBFF 97.7, Between the Lines, Understanding the Bible. We take you through slowly and methodically and try to expound upon your knowledge and understanding of God's Word. God has hidden many things in this book. He said He did. It's not by interpretation. He said, I put lots of hidden things in my book, and it does my heart good for you to search them out. But in order to do that, you can't just sit in church and listen to pastor, because the pastor's going to read you a phrase or two and then give a sermon on it. You got to read and read and read for yourself. Don't ever believe what you hear in church. Go home and make sure that's what it is. I was a Pentecostal for many years. I love Pentecostal people. Not putting them down. But I was trying to hold on to this Jesus Christ thing that I had found and was given salvation through His sacrifice, and then told that I had to participate in the law also. Just a little bit, you gotta hold on to these things in the law too. Make yourself holy. Well, when I started reading the book, I found out that was not accurate. I call it a lie. I don't think it was a lie that was given out of the, trying to deceive people. It's given out of ignorance. The Bible says if you hold on to one piece of the law, you must keep it all. And by doing so, you're telling Jesus Christ what He did just wasn't quite good enough. You should have thrown some religious symbology in there and religious acts that I need to do. And Sunday comes to mind. The Sabbath, keep it holy. So, will we help our neighbors on Sunday when they're in need? No, it's the Sabbath. Will we work on Sunday if there's a need? No, it's the Sabbath. Well, it's not the Sabbath. You're keeping Sunday holy. You're already violating the law because the Sabbath is Saturday. And the law is so rigid. Well, God knows my mind that I'm setting a day aside for Him. No. The law is so rigid. You cannot substitute one for another. It says keep the Sabbath, you must keep that day. There are places in the law where people were out and about hunting or doing whatever and got unaware of time and missed a scheduled celebration, a scheduled holiday set aside by the law. Say Passover, you're out hunting, you and your little tribe, and you lose track of time, been out there for 3 or 4 weeks, and you come back, and the village is all cleaning up from a big party. Say, well, oh my gosh, we missed Passover. Oh, we'll just have it today. We'll honor God to Passover today. No, it doesn't work like that. The law says you are banished from the people. It's very rigid. But I tell you what, it was given as an absurdity because the children would not follow the first covenant given to Abraham. God says, I make a covenant with you and with your generations. Follow me with all your heart and circumcise your children. How easy was that? We do serve the God of love. And He wanted to make it as easy as possible for His children to navigate this world. If you've had an experience in your Christian walk, you'll know that navigating this world is much easier when your heart is following God. When your heart, you take your heart off of God, things start to go awry in all ways, shapes, and forms. And the only, and when they showed him coming out of Egypt during the Exodus, they showed God they just weren't going to follow him with all their heart. They wanted a piece of the world. They wanted to do as the people around them do. They wanted to have their own earthly king. They wanted all the pleasures of the flesh and all the pleasures of these other gods. That's what the worldly gods will give you: physical pleasures in the flesh. Physical pleasures in the flesh will lead you down a bad path and in destruction. But that's what they wanted, because we all know those are pleasurable things. And the further your heart gets from following God, the more pleasurous they become. Because that little voice inside you, God says, I place a spirit man in the heart. Because the mind of man is contrary to the will of God, and the flesh is an abomination. It's up to the spirit man to gain control of the mind and guide this flesh in the direction it's supposed to go. And the further you go down that path of worldly pleasures, the spirit man loses consciousness, and after a while you don't even hear him a little bit. You know, when you first start down that path, there's a struggle, and you're full of all sorts of doubt. You know, I know I shouldn't be doing this, you know, but it feels so good. And it becomes very disturbing. A spirit man's in there just prodding, you know, we got to get control again. And at a certain point, if you keep on going into excess, and that's what you need to get out of the book of Kings, is excess and what it does to your life. Excess of pleasures. We're talking food. Oh, well, that's not a drug, Pastor Dave. Yes, to the spirit man, food is a major drug. Major contributing factor to putting the spirit man to sleep and letting this flesh take over. You feed this flesh much more than it needs. Trust me, that spirit man will go to sleep. Paul says all things are legal for the Christian, but not all things are good for the Christian. Everything must be kept in moderation to keep a balance there. And the balance is the spirit man's in control and the flesh is under subjection and doing as the spirit man wishes him to do, because the spirit man is following after God, which is your heart following after God. So excess, we have to guard our lives from excess in all things, and anything pleasurous can become excess and become the god of your life. There's one commandment that God has a hard time making a way of forgiveness, and that's, thou shalt not put any gods before me. All the other things in this book, he seems to be able to forget about, as long as your heart comes back. And I'm not saying you can't come back from having other gods before him. You put another god before him, the wrath of God comes down on you. You might not have a chance to get it right. So we are into 2 Kings. We're into the, like I said, I want you to look at excesses. Each of these kings comes to the throne. What does he do? Does he follow after God? And it says so right here in black and white. And Jeroboam followed after God, and Asa followed after God, and his son did not follow after God. You know? Mm-hmm. And then you got to look at the details behind how well did he follow after God. So, well, Asa followed after God, but did not tear down the high places. Was his spirit man fully in control and very powerful? No. Was his spirit man in control? Yes. Followed after God. Was he able to deal with the political and religious things that were going on in his country that were against God? No. He didn't have the strength to do that. Did God fault him for that? No. In black and white, this Bible proclaims that Asa followed after God, but just didn't quite stand up as tall as he should be. And each you and I are in that same boat every day. You're following after God today? Are you standing up as tall as He asks you to do? Doesn't require you. There's your free choice, your free will. He asks you, do this, because if you do, you will have blessings and a major reward in the life to come. It's up to you every day. How tall do I stand for God? Do I go the full 10 feet tall today? Or do I just maybe hit 4 feet nine and I'm just barely keeping control of this flesh? So look for the excesses in these kings that we're getting ready to talk about. We're in chapter 3 on 2 Kings. Now Jehoram, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel in Samaria, the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned 12 years. Now, we are into when civil war had broken the kingdom, and it all became because of Solomon's excess. Solomon's heart was after God, but he started importing foreign wives with foreign gods and foreign ways, and to please his fleshly lust of his wives and concubines, he began building altars for foreign gods, knowing full well who was the true God of the world. But there we go with excess. Excess, pleasures of the flesh will bring you down. So we have two kingdoms, northern kingdom Israel and the southern kingdom Judah. And he wrought evil in the sight of the Lord. Okay, right there. Jehoram, Bible records he wrought evil in the sight of the Lord. Let's look at him for a second. But not like his father and like his mother, for he put away the images of Baal, so he went a different path, but still evil, that his father had made. Nevertheless, he clave unto the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who we have called the gold standard of doing evil in the sight of God, which made Israel to sin, he departed not therefrom. And Mesha, king of Moab, was a sheep master. And just to give you a little, bring you up to speed, Jeroboam made his own religion. Jehoram's father and mother got into Baal worship big time. And he said, well, he obviously seen the error of their ways. I mean, when Elijah came and wiped out all the prophets of Baal and just kind of set the nation on a straight path, or showed them how to go on a straight path, he says, wow, well, obviously Baal is not good. But he follows after the methods of Jeroboam, who set up his own little cult with these two golden calves, and he just made his own religion. And Mesha, king of Moab, was a sheep shearer, and rendered unto the king of Israel 100,000 sheep, lambs, and 100,000 rams with wool. But it came to pass, when Ahab was dead, that the king of Moab rebelled against the king of Israel. And King Jehoram went out of Samaria the same time, and numbered all Israel. And he went and sent to Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, saying, the king of Moab hath rebelled against me. Wilt thou go with me against Moab to battle? And he said, I will go up. I am as thou art, my people as thy people, and my horses as thy horses. So he goes to the king of Judah and said, hey, I got a problem with one of my subordinates over here. You going to bring your army and help me? He said, yeah, absolutely. We're brothers. And he said, which way shall we go? And he answered, the way through the wilderness of Edom. That's Esau's people. Just for a note. The king of Israel went, and the king of Judah, and the king of Edom, and they fetched a compass of 7 days' journey, and there was no water for the host, and for the cattle that followed them. And the king of Israel said, alas, that the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab. Interesting. They decide to go. There's no mention here of whether they asked God whether it was a good thing or not. Mm-hmm. As soon as they get 7 days in there, they're out of water. Things are looking bad. Obviously, it's God's fault. God has done this. He's called us all together. Right. Here.
He wants us to die.
Yes.
We're out of water.
Yes.
I said we're thirsty. Let's find another god and figure out if he's got water.
Christian, how often do you not communicate with God daily, and when things go bad, why are you doing this to me, Lord? Why has this come upon me? Aren't I trying to be a good person? But Jehoshaphat and see, and probably in Jehoram's mind, he's put away Baal. So he's probably thinking, I'm much better than my mother and father. Yeah, God should be pleased with me. I'm not doing what they did. I know how much trouble they got into. But Jehoshaphat said, is there not here a prophet? Yes. Things are bad. Let's go find God now. Oh, gosh. How guilty are all of us of that? That we may inquire of the Lord of him. One of the king of Israel's servants answered and said, here's Elisha, the son of Shaphat, which poured water on the hands of Elijah. So just last chapter, we see where Elijah was replaced by Elisha, and he was granted his wish to have twice the power of Elisha. And God granted it by allowing him to see Elijah leave in the chariot of fire that we noticed had two charioteers. And, I never heard that in church when the pastor talked about it. It wasn't just fiery horses and a chariot. There were two beings in there driving that chariot. You always thought, oh, he came along and the chariot come down there empty and he stepped up on there and took the reins and left. No, he was escorted. That was like a limo service came. And Jehoshaphat said, the word of the Lord is with him. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom went down to him. And Elisha said unto the king of Israel, what have I to do with thee? Pretty stern greeting, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
The kind of greeting you would give to an enemy? What are you doing here? Because we have the man of God, the highest ranking man of God on earth at the time, and we have a king, which the Bible just says does not follow the ways of God. Why in the world would you come see me? Don't you have another God that you should be inquiring of? Get thee to the prophets of thy father. Interesting. Who were the prophets of thy father there, Jonathan?
Yeah, that was the images they had Baal.
Prophets of Baal.
Yeah.
Yes, hey. So you said,
right.
You got a God.
Yeah.
You need to go and talk to him. And the prophets of thy mother. And the king of Israel said unto him, nay, for the Lord hath called these three kings together to deliver them into the hand of Moab.
It's not news that you want to get. I don't think that's a message he was expecting or wanting.
Well, this is King of Israel. He's saying, no, we're in a bad spot here. We need some real information. I mean, them other guys, they represent all the fun stuff in life.
Mm-hmm.
But when things get bad, what they tell us doesn't normally work out.
Maybe the fun stuff wasn't so good.
Why are we here? And Elisha said, as the Lord of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, surely were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, who the Bible records followed after God, but doesn't completely, but followed after God. God's standard is perfection. Can you achieve it, Christian? No, you cannot. Can I achieve it? No. On my best day, not even close. On my worst day, horrendous. But I'm honest.
That's everybody.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep, yep.
But you will be judged by your heart. Jehoshaphat's heart is trying to follow after God. The only thing you'll be judged by. And back to the law. The law was an abomination to show you you couldn't keep yourself holy. And the only saving grace under the law was that your heart tried to keep it. If your heart tried to keep it, God says, that's a man after my heart. Because these are my statutes which I put there, which no man can keep. And he genuinely, within his heart, wishes he could and makes a reasonable effort. The only saving grace under the law. Jesus Christ came and fulfilled the law, right? Mm-hmm. Did he work on the Sabbath, Jonathan?
His first day of work was on the Sabbath. As a matter of fact, yes. If you look in the New Testament, his first miracle was performed on the Sabbath.
Was that keeping the law?
Not according to the Pharisees and everybody else.
That's right.
They were like, wait, what are you doing, buddy?
But there you had a man whose heart was at the 100% level,
Yep. Following
after God, which shows me that the law had no power if your heart follows after God.
Because what if God decided to stop providing life on the Sabbath because he just wanted to rest?
Yeah.
Where would we all be?
Absolutely. So it's all a matter of the heart. It was never a matter of the law. It goes back to the first covenant given to Abraham. Follow me with all your heart. That's all I ask of you out of life. Am I saying Jesus Christ was sinful? Had his heart not been 100% for God under the law, yes, he would have been. But his heart, and that's all that God asked for you. He worked on the Sabbath. Read the book yourself. Mm-hmm. It's all about the heart. It was never about the law. The law was punishment because they could not follow with all their heart. And Christ came and fixed that. Came and said, follow me with all your heart. Be baptized. It's that easy again. But dare not hold on to a piece of the law. If you do, you're telling Christ what he did just was not quite up to your standard. But now bring me a minstrel. Let's back up to 14. Elijah said, as the Lord of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, surely were not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would not look toward thee nor see thee. If King Jehoshaphat were not here, who is a servant of God, I would turn my back to you.
So we wouldn't have even had a conversation.
No. Because you are nothing but a Satan worshiper. But now bring me a minstrel. And it came to pass when the minstrel played that the hand of the Lord came upon him. And he said, thus saith the Lord, make this valley full of ditches. For thus saith the Lord, ye shall not see wind, neither shall ye see rain. Yet that valley shall be filled with water, that ye may drink, both ye and your cattle and your beasts. And this is but a light thing in the sight of the Lord. He would deliver the Moabites also into your hand. And ye shall smite every fenced city and every choice city, and shall fell every good tree and stop all wells of water. And mar every good piece of land with stones. And it came to pass in the morning, when the meat offering was offered, that behold, there came water by the way of Edom. And the country was filled with water. So, they needed help. They went to the prophet of God. And because Jehoshaphat, who was a follower of God, was there. The only reason God granted mercy and he helped them and he gave them what they needed. There's also a second tier here. God often uses the Israelis to put judgment on other peoples because he has covenants with all the people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It was time for these other people to be judged. Shall I judge them by the hand of an unrighteous man in Israel? Yes, because they need judgment at this point. And that unrighteous man in Israel, the king of Israel, is very fortunate he had the righteous king of Judah with him. And they were used as an instrument of judgment against Moab. God has orchestrated every portion of this book in every way. When all the Moabites heard that the kings were come up to fight against them, they gathered all that were able to put on armor and upward and stood in the border. They rose up early in the morning. The sun shone upon the water, and the Moabites saw the water on the other side as red as blood. And they said, this is blood. The kings are surely slain, and they have smitten one another. Hey, What happened down there? They wiped each other out. Moab, to spoil. They spent one another. Now, therefore, Moab, to the spoil. Let's go, boys, and get all their stuff. When they came to the camp of Israel, the Israelites rose up and smote the Moabites, so that they fled before them. But they went forward, smiting the Moabites, even in their country. And they beat down the cities, and on every good piece of land cast every man his stone and filled it. And they stopped all the wells of water and filled all the good trees. Only in Kir Hoseth left they the stones thereof.
We'll be back with more spiritual insights on Between the Lines after a brief message from our sponsors. Stay tuned!